Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. As you know, we were going through the Massachusetts ratification debates, and we're still going through them. But obviously, the information that we're garnering out of this, as I read this to you, you are clearly hearing that Massachusetts was defining an enumerated and limited constitution, even though back then they thought that they were giving the federal government a lot of power, or the general government a lot of power, in magnitude of what the states do today compared to what they did back then. The federal government is on steroids, and it is outside the boundaries of the Constitution. That's why this is the only show that actually goes through and proves the limitations on the federal government and how over 80% of what they're doing are violations to the Constitution. This is critical. If we're going to sustain our hybrid constitution republic, and what I mean by that, is that we have a Republican form of national government and every state underneath that. In other words, the Republic is made up of states, and each of the states are Republican as well. They are miniature republics with counties, seats of government, and so forth. And many of the states, the reason they're having problems is they're failing to comply to that American concept of American republicanism. I'm not going to get into that now. That's definitely a couple of shows in itself to talk about American republicanism and that Sherman Compromise or the Connecticut Compromise and go through just how they delineated what republicanism was and how government functioned better with checks and balances. So, if you cannot listen or stream this entire show, the listen line is 605-562-4209 or 605-313-0599. Now, if you have a comment, by all means, just call us, 425-270-5416. Now, I'm going to be changing that number down the road, but that's the number, that is our administrative number. So if you've got a comment, a complaint, or somebody's done you wrong, call Ann Landers. Like I say, I'm not here to solve your personal problems, but I do want to hear from you if you're actually drinking Red State Coffee and your thoughts on it. We would love to capture your ideas, your feelings about that product that is supporting us. This show was also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. Now, we're not going to be getting into the news du jour. I think this is far more important because I have to frame and I have to place context to what the federal government is supposed to be doing. Almost everything you're hearing in the news is relating to the fact that the federal government is doing things that they have no business doing. When you hear Liz Cheney get up there and talk about Republican and conservative values, that has nothing, zero, to do with the Constitution. She talks about the fact that the progressives want to get out there and, you know, put government health care on steroids, and that's socialism. Well, the fact is, Liz, the fact that you are actually functioning and operating an agency of mandating health care, that is socialism. And so the difference in paradigms between those in the swamp of the Republican nature and the Democratic nature is the size and the controls and the draconian methods and so forth of the two sides. They're all socialism. It's all violations of the Constitution. And that's why we need to get into these facts. That's why we need to get into the terms of the contract to clearly understand that every single state left the gate going into this new form of government with the full understanding that the federal government or this general government that this Constitution created only had powers that were enumerated to it. If it was going to do anything else, it had to have those powers delegated to it by the states, that the states were supreme in all things. We've been duped. The Supreme Court and every officer practically in every different position within government at one point in time or another has used their positions to self-aggrandize their role as government. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through these ratification debates and we're going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was an accord, a harmonious spirit amongst the states in creating a limited and defined federal government. And not only that, that the states were going to be superior in all things not delegated. So let me just kind of move forward because I already kind of touched on getting your coffee on. We are sponsored by Red State Coffee. These guys are a very patriotic organization. They love what we're doing. And so please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and click on the link to Red State Coffee. What you want to do from that point is get yourself some coffee. Get your grinds or fresh beans. Doesn't matter. And actually, when you buy the coffee, they actually grind it for you and send it to you. That way you get fresh ground coffee right there in the mail. The day they send it is the day they grind it. Another way you can support us is through our crowdfunding with GoFundMe. Just by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org, you can actually go to our GoFundMe link. It'll take you there, and you can look at what we need. We are in arrears. What did I get? $90 so far, and I need a couple thousand dollars just to cover my costs of travel going to Wyoming on my first trip in November. I went in May, and now I'm going to have to go again in August. And so I'm just asking if you can please help with our travel costs so that we can communicate to these good folks in Wyoming in bringing them to the table what we need, folks. And the reason why this is so important is we need Wyoming to stand up. If Wyoming is the state that stands up and says, look, my fellow brethren and sisters in the state realm, my siblings, we are being oppressed. We're living under federal tyranny, and we need to stand up to this. And if they actually call for the audit and call upon other states to join them, then we are well on our way in winning this. Because once one state stands up and starts challenging the other states to do their job, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Dakotas, Idaho, Utah, all the red states will start getting the message and they'll start understanding. More importantly, I believe the people will start demanding of these other states to do what Wyoming is doing, to become a cowboy state and standing up against federal tyranny. More importantly, we need your support, not just financially, but we need your support to get involved and get this message out. Listening is one way of doing it, and getting other people to listen to the content that we're talking about here is critical. So what we need you to do is just start getting, you know, one person a week, get two people a week, build it up, get more and more people engaged in trying to understand what we need to do and understanding this concept of republic review, the audit process and the states asserting their authority over their contract. That's what republic review is. So with that, if you want to get involved, an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org would suffice. That's all we need to do, okay? All right, so let me dive forward because I do the typical, you know, hey, there's no sign in the news that the federal government is going to relinquish any of the roles, powers, responsibilities that they have assumed unconstitutionally. So what that means is you and I, we are going to have to step in. We're going to have to force the federal government into compliance. And so what we were doing yesterday, we were going through the Massachusetts debates, and it was Reverend Thatcher who was up speaking, and he was talking about the different objections to the Constitution and so forth. And so let me just continue on. So if you missed yesterday's show, you'll have to download the podcast. New York, and this is his comment, I'm quoting him, New York absolutely refused complying. And what was happening was he was talking about how the different states were failing to comply with the Articles of Confederation and paying their debts and so forth, because Massachusetts was one of those states that actually paid. And he points out that the majority of the people that were fighting the war at the end of the war were from Massachusetts. And the majority of the subsistence that they were getting was coming from Massachusetts. And so they felt that they were paying more than their lion's share in the Revolutionary War, and they were really concerned with the fact that the other states weren't giving their consideration and their fair share. And so the whole point was, by creating this new constitution, that they would have the sufficiency in actually getting the taxing and going to the states and getting them to do their due diligence and supporting the needs of the republic. So going on, I'm in the middle of this quote, and it starts off with, New York absolutely refused complying with the requisitions of Congress. In Virginia, armed men endeavored to stop the courts of justice. In South Carolina, creditors by law were obliged to receive barren and useless land for contracts made in silver and gold. So I will pick up, and actually I'll just reread this again when we come back. Again, we are focused on the ratification debates, and we will be right back after these two messages. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me just pick up from where I started last time. And that is, again, with Mr. Thatcher, our Reverend Thatcher. And again, he was kind of complaining that in the last Civil War, the Revolutionary War, because technically the Revolutionary War was a civil war. It was about two different sides trying to control government. Britain and the colonies. Anyway, New York absolutely. So again, he's complaining about these different, how the different states were responding to the needs of Congress for the Revolutionary War. And he goes, New York absolutely refused complying with the requisitions of Congress in Virginia, armed men endeavored to stop the courts of justice. In South Carolina, creditors by law were obliged to receive barren and useless land for contracts made in silver and gold. I pass over the instance of Rhode Island. Their conduct was notorious. In some states, laws were made directly against the Treaty of Peace. In others, statutes were enacted which clashed directly against any federal union. New lands sufficient to discharge a great part of the continental debt intruded upon by needy adventurers. Our frontier settlements exposed to the ravages of the Indians, while the several states were unable or unwilling to relieve their distress. Lay all those circumstances together, and you will find some apology for those gentlemen who framed this Constitution. I trust you may charitably assign other motives for their conduct than a design to enslave their country and to parcel out for themselves its honors and emoluments. The second consideration deserves its weight. Can these local governments be sufficient to protect us from foreign enemies or from disaffection at home? 13 states are formed already. The same number are probably to be formed from the lands not yet cultivated. He's talking about the Western expanses. Of the former, yet smaller divisions may be made. The province of Maine hath desired a separation in time. A separation may take place. And actually, that took place several years later, and it was held up because of the slave debate, the Missouri Compromise. But I digress. He goes on and says, who knows but what the same may happen with respect to the old colony of Plymouth? Now conceive the number of states increased their boundaries, lessened their interest, clashing, how easy a prey to a foreign power, how liable to war among themselves. Let these arguments be weighed, and I dare say, sir, there is no man but what would conceive that a coercive power over the whole, searching through all parts of the system, is necessary to the preservation and happiness of the whole people. But I readily grant, all these reasons are not sufficient to surrender up the essential liberties of the people. But do we surrender them? This Constitution hath been compared by both its defenders and opponents to the British government. In my view of it, there is a great difference. In Britain, the government is said to consist of three forms: monarchy, aristocracy, and democracy. But in fact, is but a few removes from, and it says, but a few removes from absolute despotism. In the crown is vested the power of adding at pleasure to the second branch of nominating of to all the places of honor and emoluments, which was the House of Lords, of purchasing by its immense revenues the suffrage of the House of Commons, the voice, because that was the democracy, that's where the House of Commons came in. The voice of the people is but the echo of the king. And to be clear, that democracy was still a representative. It was not a direct democracy where the people voted on every issue. And that's what the House of Representatives is supposed to. Anyway, let me go back. The voice of the people is but the echo of the king, and their boasted privileges lie entirely at his mercy. In this proposed form, each branch of power is derived either immediately or directly from the people. The lower house are elected directly by those persons who are qualified to vote for the representatives of the state, and the expiration of 2 years become private men, unless their past conduct entitles them to a future election. The Senate are elected by the legislatures of the different states and represent their sovereignty. You got to understand, that's what the Senate is supposed to do. The House of Representatives represents the sovereignties of the people, And senates are supposed to represent the sovereignty of the state or the sub-element. In the state government, a senate is supposed to represent the counties. Anyway, I digress a little bit. But he goes on and says, the powers are a check on each other and can never be made either dependent on one another or independent of the people. The president is chosen by the electors who are appointed by the people. Got to understand this. As they were explaining the Electoral College, they were appointed or elected by the people. And so the electors were the ones who actually chose the president. The high courts of justice arise from the president and the Senate, but yet the ministers of them can be removed only upon bad behavior. The independence of judges is one of the most favorable circumstances to public liberty, for when they have become the slaves of a venial corrupt court and the hirelings of tyranny, all property is precarious and personal security at an end. A man may be stripped of all his possessions and murdered without the forms of law. And this kind of goes to the whole concept of what do they call that? Asset forfeiture is reprehensible. It's repugnant to the concept of our Republican form of government. And there was just no way, because he was talking about how the courts could strip you of all your property and basically murder you. And we're almost at that point now, because that's what's going on with the courts today. They have no limits to what they will take from you, your property, your vehicles, so forth and so on. Anyway, thus it appears that all parts of the system arise ultimately from the people and are still independent of each other. There are other restraints which, though not directly named in the Constitution, yet are evidently discerned by every man of common observation. These are the government of the several states and the spirit of liberty in the people. We are wronged or injured, our immediate representatives are those to whom we ought to apply. Their power and influence will still be great. But should any servants of the people, and he's talking about when they apply to their state government, not the federal government. But should any servants of the people, however eminent their stations, attempt to enslave them from the spirit of liberty, such oppositions would arise as would bring them to the scaffold. But admitting that there are dangers in accepting this general government, yet are there not greater hazards in rejecting it? Such is, Mr. President, the state of our affairs that is not in our power to carve for ourselves, to avoid the greatest and choose the least of these two evils is all that we can do. What then will be the probable effects of this Constitution be rejected? Have we not reason to fear commotions in this Commonwealth? If they arise, because they just had Shays' Rebellion, if they arise, can we be always certain that we shall be furnished with a citizen who, though possessed of extensive influences and the greatest abilities, will make no other use of them to quiet the tumult of the people, to prevent civil war, and to restore the usual course of law and justice? Are we not in danger from other states when their interests or prejudices are opposite to ours? And in such scenes of hostile contention, will not the cilia drench the land in blood? Or some Cromwell or Caesar laid down our liberties prostrate at his feet? Will not foreign nations attack us in our weak, divided condition, and once more render us provinces to some potentate, in other words, a king or what have you, potentate? Anyway, I'm having a problem with that word today. So some king or magistrate of Europe, or will these powers to whom we are indebted lie quiet? They certainly will not. They are now waiting for our decision, but when they once see that our union is broken and that we are determined to neglect them, they will issue out letters of marque and reprisal and entirely destroy our commerce." And so it was a very potent message he was sending, because he was basically saying that the current system was completely inadequate because it was unable to ensure and give them the Continental Congress and the general government the necessary monies and support and so forth that they needed to even just function. And so we're at another break. So Reverend Thatcher comes back and he actually has some more to say. And anyway, so we'll be right back with Reverend Thatcher when we come back from these two promos. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So Reverend Thatcher is continuing on, and he basically goes on and says this. If this system is broken up, and he's talking about the Articles of Confederation, will 13 or even 9 states ever agree to another? And will Providence smile on a people who despise the privileges put into their hands and who neglect the plainest principles of justice and honesty? After all, I by no means pretend that there is a complete perfection in this proposed Constitution. Like all other human productions, it hath its faults. Provisions is made for an amendment. Whenever from practice it is found oppressive, I would add the proposals which His Excellency hath condescended to lay before this honorable convention respecting future alterations are real improvements for the better, and we have no reason to doubt but they will be equally attended to by the other states as they lead to common security and preservation. Some of the gentlemen in the opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. They have shown us the danger which arises from vesting magistrates with too much power. I wish they had gone on to tell the whole truth. They might have shown how nearly licentiousness and tyranny are allied, that they who will not be governed by reason must submit to force, that demagogues in all free governments have at first held out an idea of extreme liberty, excuse me, and have seized on the rights of the people under the mask of patriotism. Just, I want you to be aware of these powerful words here. And actually, Aristotle talked about this exact same stuff, about demagoguery and how they rise to power, and they do it under the guise of patriotism, but in the form of nationalism, and that's how they start socializing, collectivizing power, and so forth. Anyway, they might have shown us a republic in which wisdom, virtue, and order were qualities for which a man was liable to banishment. And on the other hand, boasting, sedition, and falsehood, the sure road to honor and promotion. I am sorry that it hath been hinted by some gentlemen in this house as if they were a combination of the rich and learned and those of liberal professions to establish and support an arbitrary form of government. Far be it from me to retort so uncharitable and unchristian a suggestion. I doubt not but the gentlemen who are of different sentiments from myself are actuated by the purest motives. Some of them I have the pleasure of particularly acquainted with and can safely pronounce them to be men of virtue and honor. I mean, he's talking about the enemies of the Constitution at this point. He's calling these people enemy, or you know, men of virtue and honor. They have no doubt a laudable concern for the liberties of their country, the country of Massachusetts. But I would beg them to remember that extreme jealousy and suspicion may be as fatal to freedom as security and negligence. With respect to myself, I am conscious of no motive which guides me in this great solemn question, but what I would justify to my own heart, both of the bed of death and before the tribunal of omnipotence, I am a poor man. I have the feelings of a poor man. If there are honors and emoluments in this proposed constitution, I shall, by my profession and circumstances in life, forever exclude them from me. It is my wish and prayer that in the solemn verdict we are very soon to pronounce, we may be directed to that measure which will be for the glory, freedom, and felicity of my country. I shall trouble in this house no further than by joining sincerely in the wish of the honorable gentleman from Atopsham, that the people in their day may know things which belong to their peace. And that was Reverend Thatcher. And that was basically the highlights or the extracts out of the Massachusetts debate. There's really only, what was that? Let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six different people's different perspectives. I could have gone through Massachusetts a lot more. They were very good speeches, but most of them were really focused on a spiritual side of this. And so, and of course, what would you expect from the Puritans? I know that actually, if you really look at all of the different debates on the Constitution in the different states, you will find that these debates were being done by very religious men. Most of them were lawyers and equally reverends, or men of the cloth, if that's what you want to call it. And so it's eye-opening to see what reverence these men had for deity, what reverence these men had for each other, and so forth. I mean, civility definitely took on a whole new or different meaning as we started progressing away from them, because today it's about political correctness and it's not about enlightenment. So anyway, What I want to do is the next debate we're going to get into is going to be the Pennsylvania debates. And what you're going to find is that you had two distinctive sides in the Pennsylvania debates. The pro-Constitution was primarily addressed by Mr. Wilson. The anti-federalists and their positions were not recorded, or at least they weren't privy. They were recorded, but they weren't included. And this is the brilliance of what Pennsylvania did. By only including the Federalist comments, those comments supporting the contract, they removed the anti-insinuations and so forth. And so they're only giving you the terms and definitions that were accepted. They're not including the things that weren't accepted. So it was, to me, it was brilliant that they actually separated these records so that you had the records that provided definition to the Constitution as well as clarifications and delineating the terms and so forth, what this means and so forth. And so one of the things that jumps out at me with the Pennsylvania debates, and we'll get into this, you will find Mr. Wilson constantly harping on a government of the people, that the people are the sovereigns, and ultimately the people are the sovereigns. But people forget that the people, or most people, just think that it's we the people, we the people. But in these days, in these contexts, these were Republican-formed government, in other words, people that were being represented and selected their representatives. In doing so, they had to delegate powers to their representatives in the state to be able to tax them, to be able to do those things. He constantly refers to the thought and concept throughout these highlights that I'm going to go through, that he constantly refers to the people being the sovereigns. And so the reason I'm kind of making a point of this is so that you understand what he's really saying when the people are the sovereigns. Well, the people are the sovereigns in having the ultimate say, but they have already delegated powers. And so anyway, let me move on and let me get into this right here. This is Mr. Wilson, and he says, "Sir, I think there is another subject with regard to which this Constitution deserves approbation. I mean the accuracy with which the line is drawn between the powers of the general government and those of the particular state governments. We have heard some general observations on this subject from the gentlemen who conduct the opposition. Okay, they have asserted that these powers are unlimited and undefined. These words are as easily pronounced as limited and defined. They have been, they already been answered by my honorable colleague, Mr. McKean," and he was the other pro-federalist. He was the pro-Constitution, and so the two different gentlemen that we are going to be citing in reading the Pennsylvania debates will be Mr. McKean and Mr. Wilson. "Therefore, I shall not enter into explanation, but it is not pretended that the line is drawn with mathematical precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in true light will see the powers are as minutely enumerated and defined as possible, as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so much expectation is taken, or exception is taken, is nothing more than what was necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted." And we get into this really, I think, the best debates of these, of all the debates, were Virginia, because they really get into this. Mr. Wilson, in a different quote, says, "Well, it sounds like we're at a hard break. So what we'll have to do is we'll get into this different quote when we come back. So please stay tuned, and we will get into the hard limitations of the federal government from a Pennsylvania perspective and Mr. Wilson when we get back. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we were just talking about Mr. Wilson and his next comment to the body of the convention as they were considering the Constitution in Pennsylvania. And this is so important. And the reason why these debates are so important now is, one, because the lack of compliance to the contract. If we want to understand what the federal government is supposed to be doing, we have to understand the terms of the contract. Okay? And I'm here to tell you that the ratification debates are those definitions. When people say that the Supreme Court needs to interpret whether it's there or not, absolutely not. The definitions were clear enough in these ratification debates of what the sentiments were that the people were granting to the federal government, that they were creating a very limited and defined general government. Moving on, Mr. Wilson says this: a very important difficulty arose from comparing the extent of this country to be governed with the kind of government which it would be proper to establish in it. It has been an opinion continuanced by high authority that, quote, that the natural property of small states is to be governed as a republic, of middle ones to be subject to a monarchy, and of large empires to be swayed by despotic prince. And that the consequences is that in order to preserve the principles of the established government, the state must be supported in the extent it has acquired, that the spirit of the state will alter in proportion as it extends or contracts its limits. And this was done by Montesquieu, and they were actually quoting Montesquieu's book, page 8, chapter 20, or whatever. I think it was book 8 and actually chapter 20, yeah. This opinion seems to be supported rather than contradicted by the history of governments of the old world. Here, then, the difficulty appeared in full view. On one hand, the United States contains an immense extent of territory, and according to the foregoing opinion, a despotic government is best adapted to that extent. On the other hand, it is well known that however the citizens of the United States might with pleasure submit to the legitimate restraints of a Republican Constitution, they would reject the indignation and fetters of despotism. What then was to be done? The idea of a Confederate Republic presented itself. This kind of constitution has been thought to have, quote, all the internal advantages of a Republican together with the external force of monarchical rule or monarchical government. And so if you kind of understand what he said here, he called it a Confederate Republic. You've heard me use the term hybrid. A hybrid republic is where you have both a federation as well as a confederacy. A federation is where you delegate most all powers to that general government, and the general government becomes despotic. A confederation is where you only delegate very limited power, and you actually keep most all the power back at the states. Today, because of the Civil War and the Confederacy, most people think a Confederacy is evil. No, just that particular one wasn't. They were not nice people. However, a Confederacy is where most of the power is retained by the sovereign states. And that's technically what we have. We have a hybrid. We have a little bit of both. And that is the whole point of a hybrid constitutional republic, to create enough of a balance to maintain as much sovereignty at the state level as possible by only surrendering a few powers and enumerating those powers so that those are the only things that the federal or the general government can exercise. Now, Mr. Wilson goes on, and here he says, there necessarily exists in every government a power from which there is no appeal and which, for that reason, may be termed supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable. Where does this power reside? To this question, writers on different governments will give different answers. Sir William Blackstone will tell you that in Britain, the power is lodged in the British Parliament, that the Parliament may alter the form of government, and that its power is absolute without control. The idea of a constitution limiting and superintending the operations of legislative authority seems not to have been accurately understood in Britain. There are at least no traces of practice conformable to such a principle. The British Constitution is just what the British Parliament pleases. When the Parliament transfers legislative authority to Henry VIII, The act transferring could not, in the strict acceptance of the term, be called unconstitutional. To control the power and conduct of the legislature by an overruling constitution was an improvement in the science and practice of government reserved to the American states. Perhaps some politician who has not considered the sufficient accuracy of our political system would answer that in our governments, the supreme power was vested in the constitutions. This opinion approaches a step nearer to the truth, but does not reach it. The truth is that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power remains in the people. As our constitutions are superior to our legislatures, so the people are superior to our constitutions. Indeed, the superiority in this last stance is much greater for the people possess over the constitution's control in act as well as right. And then he makes this thing, in the constitution, all authority is derived from the people. And so that was a little side note quote there in this address. And so clearly he's identifying, and I've told you he does this, he identifies that the people are the absolute sovereigns. However, the people do surrender and do create this, I don't want to call it a mystical government, but what they do is they enumerate powers. But the interesting thing is that they do this via a constitution. And the constitution is supreme over the legislative body. In other words, let's say the constitution does not allow your state. There's nothing in your state constitution that allows your state to have anything to do with any form of health care services or anything. It's not in the constitution. And your state government is actually passing laws, and they're doing things to instill, establish, and build upon the federal mandate of Obamacare and everything else. They are technically and equally violating the state constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution, because there's nowhere in the U.S. Constitution where they have been delegated the power to, you know, to dictate healthcare, healthcare services, healthcare standards, none of that. The states are the only ones that should have that power, and that was by design. So Mr. Wilson goes on, and let me see how long this is, because I got about 2 minutes left, and I can get this in. The secret is now disclosed, and it is discovered to be a dread that the boasted state sovereignties will, under the system, be disrobed of part of their power. Before I go into examination of this point, let me ask one important question. Upon what principle is it contended that the sovereign power resides in the state governments? The honorable gentleman has said, truly, that there can be no subordinate sovereignty. Now, if there cannot, my position is that the sovereignty resides in the people. They have not parted with it. They have only dispensed such portions of power as were conceived necessary for the public welfare. This Constitution stands upon this broad principle. I know very well, sir, that the people have hitherto been shut out of the federal government, but it is not meant that they should no longer be disposed of their rights. In order to recognize this leading principle, the proposed system sets out with a declaration with its existence depends upon the supreme authority of the people alone. We have heard much about the consolidated government. I wish the honorable gentleman would condescend to give us a definition of what he meant by it. I think the more necessary because I apprehend that the term in the numerous times it has not been already been used in the same sense. It may be said, and I believe it has been said, that the consolidated government is such as will absorb and destroy the governments of the several states. If it is not taken in this view, the plan before us is not consolidated government, as I showed on a former day, and may, if necessary, show further on some future occasion. On the other hand, if it is meant that the general government will take from the state governments their power in some particulars, it is confessed and evident that this will be its operations and effect. To be clear, what he was basically saying here is that the fact is that the general government, as they were defining it, was not a consolidated government, that it would basically destroy the state governments. That they were arguing very vehemently against that. And they were ardently telling and pointing out that this was an enumerated and limited constitution. With that, my friends, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we'll be back with more Pennsylvania debates. Please join us again. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.